Triple M Footy is the number one football call on radio. Footy's on the radio. And your front row.
For Villawood Properties, you belong here.
Welcome to the Friday Rub.
For McDonald's fan feed boxes.
Triple M rocks footy.
Yes, we do. Friday night football. Can't wait for this one. The Tigers and the Hawks at the Triple MCG to get round five underway. Hawthorn trying to bounce back after a horrible week last week on the field, which you very rarely say about a team that's won the last three grand finals and played in the last four. And the Tigers have had an awful start to the season, just the one win from their six matches. So plenty for these two sides to play for tonight. As I look around this room, they're always the best in the business, parked in the Triple M commentary box. Luke Darcy in ripping form, the hot breakfast just way ahead FM breakfast style.
Hello, Jim.
Hello to you, Duke.
Good to be here, mate. I'm really hoping the Tigers put on a good show tonight. The competition is a much better spectacle. The energy in the whole place is better when the Tigers are good. At the moment, they're not, but hopefully they can pull one out of the box tonight.
The Chief, as always, on a Friday night. Nice to see you, four-time Premiership superstar.
Always happy to be here, Jim. Looking forward to both of these teams because I think they're both got a little bit to prove, a little bit to show everyone what they're capable of.
Big comments from you early in the week. We're going to hear them in just a second. Damo joins us as always. Hello, Damo.
Hello, Jim. I'm a little bit bemused at the writing off of Hawthorn. They're 4-2, and I know their percentage is below 92, but I'm not seeing the major concerns that the man next to me is.
Special treat tonight for Triple M listeners, and that is the superstar from the Saints, six-time best and fairest, Nick Riewoldt, joins us. Rui, welcome to you.
Thank you, James. Yeah, three of the last four for the Tigers against the Hawks, and I spoke to Jack on the way in, Jack Riewoldt, and quietly confident they've gone about tinkering the game style a little bit this week, so I look forward to seeing how they put that in action.
Funny game, footy. You sometimes feel comfortable playing against a mob for no particular reason, Duke. And Richmond have always got a thing about the Hawks.
Yeah, what wouldn't they love just that to unfold for them tonight? And their game style of holding the footy and maintaining possession has been successful against. Unfortunately, their defence is leaking serious goals at the moment. 16 goals a game they're averaging. They won't be able to sustain that against the Hawks tonight.
Alex Rance missing won't help them
along that line. They got a few challenges tonight, no doubt about it, the Tigers.
What sort of a week have they had, Damo? Your news antenna's better than anyone's. It's the messaging, just how they're tracking.
Yeah, the messaging's interesting, Jim. They put everyone out at the start of the week on all the footy programs. I think you had Brendan Gallon, didn't you, Dust, on your program.
Yep.
They wouldn't give us anyone, Jim, on Footy Classified.
Well, any reason for that?
I don't know, but they certainly did the rounds, and I think they did it pretty well. I think they mopped it up relatively well after the loss to Port Adelaide on the Saturday night. They didn't do anything on the Sunday, but hit the ground running very hard Monday morning all the way through to Monday night. Look, the messaging changed. Dan Richardson's mixed message comments about the players they brought in, Jim, only getting them to a certain point and also almost stifling the pursuit of a top four finish. It wasn't well received. We know that there were two players at least who raised those issues with the club and Dan particularly himself. And there's just rumblings. And we do know too, look, that not every single person beneath Damien Hardwick is out of contract, but a lot of them are. And they are reviewing. I know Piggy O'Neill today said that there is no Geelong type review, but there is, and as Dar's probably touched on this last week, it's an ongoing review that they've undertaking, and it's focusing particularly on development and the assistant coaches.
And you can understand that from a president's point of view. The last thing you want to do at round six of the season is come out and say review, rebuild, because
players would be happy to hear that, Rui.
Yeah, we were in a similar situation, I think round two a few years ago, when someone at the club came out and said rebuild. Well, round two, there's still 20 weeks to go. That sort of put a bit of a pin in the balloon, that one. We were all pretty flat.
Someone was the Scott Waters, wasn't it, from memory? Was that the coach at the time?
It was at the time, yeah.
Yeah. So just for the layman, the mindset of that being made public at that stage of a season, it is just deflating, is it?
Yeah,
even
it
though
is.
It may be real and about to be what is going to happen at the
Well, especially when you go into the season with such high hopes for improvement and potentially finals. And at round two, you release that pressure valve, you release all the expectation. It doesn't really sell much hope to the playing group, particularly a young group, when hope is all you've got.
Hey, Warrior, what I find particularly interesting through all of this is that the media is virtually on a witch hunt. They're starting to name people, name roles, and they're looking for a scalp. And the club is acting very relaxed, very confident. They're reinforcing their support for the people that are there. So either the media's got this horribly wrong or the club's in denial.
Look, I don't see it that way on this occasion, Chief. I'm not saying that we in the media don't sometimes do that. It's not a nice part of what we do. But I don't read it that way when it comes to the Richmond. I think, rightly or wrongly, the club did re-endorse Damien Hardwick for 2 years. That's a decision I didn't think they needed to do at the time.
Having said that, because of that, it's like, okay, he's off off limits. Let's go after everyone else.
And that I can see where you're coming from. But at the same time, when it comes to assistant coaches, it's not the high-end, pointy-ended story. But where the footy club is at, and in the admission that Dan Richardson gave during the week,
what did he actually say, Dave? Because nothing that I heard him say to me suggested that the season was over and that there was a rebuild going on, or that he was just talking in factual terms about their list. And I don't think the players could be too outraged by that.
They were. They raised it with him. And
in what context,
though? Well, the context, the bit that it wasn't the entire interview, but it was the part where he referred to the players they topped up with. And we don't need to bang through those names. We've done it every week on this particular forum, haven't we? But it's those players got them to the finals and they're not getting beyond that first final. And they're his words, not mine. Now, whether it came across the way he intended it to, I don't know. I haven't spoken to him since, but it was an issue. And as I said, there were at least two players that I know of who felt the need to complain about it and at least get greater clarity on what he said.
So is that the major difference, that the list this year, because haven't Richmond done this the last 2 years? Started really slowly. I think 2 years ago they won the last nine to get into the finals, played great footy, beat Sydney up in Sydney, which was a huge win, and they almost looked unstoppable. So what's different this year? Is it that we don't think that list is going to take them all the way?
I think it's that, Nick. And I also do believe, too, and this is the footy club itself, when they went through what they said, Jim, was a really significant review on Damien Hardwick specifically, and then about 2 weeks before the season started, announced him as the coach for 2017 and 18 as well, on the back of that review, on the back of the three finals appearances, and the commitment and the promises that we know what we did wrong in those previous 3 years, we're going to rectify it this year. And then you get to round six on a Friday night and they're 1-5. That's where it's got to.
All right, so where do they go to from here, I guess, is the big question. I mean, we've discussed 1-5. Let's say they're not going to beat the running premier tonight. They very well might, by the way, but let's say they don't. Well, you know, what happens? They just say, righto, I know what I think they should do, but what do you think will happen?
They've got to get back into the draft in a significant way, but that's easier said than done. Look, I hear what Matthew Lloyd says about putting up one of the big names. Now, it's not something I do, Jim, but to do so, you need to get someone with currency. And Brett Deledio is one who's got prime currency. I wouldn't do it if I'm Richmond, for what it's worth. But they need to explore those possibilities and those options. And you said you know what you did. You went down a path at North Melbourne. I know it's hard for you to talk about another club the way we are about Richmond right now. But what would you do if you were walking into that footy club?
Oh, well, in 2007, 8-9, we'd cleaned 28 players off the list. But I think we're in a different place. We hadn't played... Actually, I had played finals the year before and lost badly to Sydney the year after that. So maybe it's a bit later, 8, 9, 10. But I think you do, Chief, you did it at Hawthorne, you do need to be brutally honest with where your list's at. And if you're honestly looking each other in the eye and saying, we don't think we can go any further with the players we got, then you are foolhardy, I think, to mark time from there.
Well, that's the biggest decision to make. And that's the point I was trying to make before, is that I'm not sure... the way we see Richmond is the same as the way they're viewing it internally. And that's okay. They may be proven right in the end.
Yep.
And good luck to them if they are. But they need to turn things around pretty quickly to do that.
You can't separate out what's happened with two expansion clubs in this time. And I know everyone will say, but do they ever build a list that was going to be the best team in the competition? Maybe not. People have probably said the same about North Melbourne. They may say the same about the Bulldogs. But this is an unprecedented time where massive amounts of the talent pool went to two clubs, and you had to try and do...
Yeah, you finished fourth bottom and got picked 14.
Exactly. So you're trying to do this in a time of the game that's never happened before, and I think Richmond compiled a list that's good enough to, as Rui just said, win significant games, get them into final. Perhaps they have just fallen short, and I think that's what Dan Richardson might have been saying. Okay, we did try, but maybe we do need to look at alternatives now, and I think that's probably just being factual as opposed to writing anything off.
And Dustin, Chief, Nick and Jim, do you feel that the big five, and I throw Edwards into that big five now, maybe the big four that they've always got, is that sort of also arguably a problem, that the now is apparent and that they've got a bolster to cash in on having those four there, or... do you get rid of one of the four? I mean, I think that's the question that they're probably facing right now.
The advantage that they've got with their big four or five at the moment is their age profile.
Yep.
So Jack, Koch, Rance, who are we talking? Lids is probably the older one, but and Dustin. They're at the age where they've still got a lot of footy left in their careers. So we were in a similar situation at St Kilda where we said, okay, this list isn't going to take us any further. And we made some really hard decisions around Del Santo, Goddard, McAvoy was the one that was a bit younger. But players that were probably not going to be a part of the club's future and next premiership anyway. And it's an extremely difficult thing to do for the players that were left behind, say myself, Joey, Sam Fisher. It was really tough and hard to watch your best friends and your teammates that you'd gone through a lot with go to another football club. But at the time, it was the right thing for us. And I think now we're finally starting to see some of the fruits of those hard decisions.
But you wouldn't do that if you're Richmond, given the age profile of the four you mentioned.
Well, I think that's the benefit that they have, that those young players are still their best players.
Yeah, but that age profile is still okay, but it shows that they've got it wrong along the way, because they've had those four or five players we're talking about for the last 5 or 6 years, and they haven't surrounded them with enough young talent to grow with them. That's been the problem for the Tigers.
All right, big comments from you, Chief, about your club.
Not really, Tim.
No, they were.
Just honest.
No,
that's all they were.
Chief,
I know it's not a term you're familiar with.
I loved the honesty, but they were big too. They don't try and undersell them. They were large, Chief.
See, Chief, I'm not buying it, Jim. I'm not buying this in any sense of the word. We've sat next to this man for many a week, and every week he says his side can't win it, and they just win game after game and premiership. This is classic, Chief.
Well, we're going to hear it next. We'll go to a break. We'll hear it next, and then you can be the judge of just how large they are.
Can understand why Ruckman might think that.
Talking right out of his backside, Chief.
Disingenuous does.
100% disingenuous is the Chief.
Time we talked Hawks, Duke, and... I know we sort of try and push and prod and just cajole the Chief into saying something on a Friday night.
Just give you something at some point.
Not
would be
always
ideal.
Easy to do. Yeah. Quite often just cantankerous and not speaking and really giving us nothing.
The way he rolls.
But what I did notice Monday night with on the couch, one of my favourites on Fox Footy, was Chief had this to say about his beloved Hawks.
I think they'll play finals this year, but I can't have them in my premiership consideration. There are a lot of issues underneath that are... And Alistair Clarkson's been very open in saying the last few weeks they've been lucky to win. He knows there's problems. They are battling.
Chief.
Oh, something you don't know, Jim?
Not playing in the granite. Your club. And
I can't see it, Jim.
Clarko saying they're better placed this year than last year, and it gave you a sort of subtle drive-by clip, which
didn't.
I like.
Look, you've got to try and be positive. I understand that, Jim. And they are 4-2. They were 3-3 last year, and they had a percentage of 140. Mm. It's not just the percentage. I mean, we've spoken a lot about contested football, which is way down. Hawthorn plays okay if they can break even in contested footy and then get enough possession to control the game. They're not getting anywhere near that. But if you drill down further and you look at scores for turnovers, percentage of conversion once the ball goes inside 50, all those numbers will tell you they're a long way off the mark from the last 3 or 4 years.
Rui, unlucky not to beat the Hawks in Launceston recently. What are your first-hand views of them?
Well, clearly in that game, they just knew how to win better than we did. They've been in that situation so many times before, and I still think, given the upside that they have within their profile at the moment, we know they're not playing their best footy, but their best is still good enough, I think, considering how even the competition is, to put them in a really aggressive spot come finals time. And we know what they do on the big stage. They've done it time and time again. So I wouldn't be so premature to write them off. Not with Roughhead coming back into the mix. They're effectively playing with a patchwork forward line at the moment, and they're 4-2.
It's just disingenuous from the Chief.
He's laughing at us now.
Look at him. You've got to call him for what he is.
No, but you're sitting there expecting Roo, who plays for another team, to write them off. He's not going to say that.
I asked him how he found them firsthand, Chief.
But he articulately explained that they're still won the last three and they're a chance to win their four.
If you blokes want to delude yourself, pile in. Go for your life.
He gave us more in a sentence than you have.
Load up.
If not them, then who?
Well, I think there's probably 6 or 7 teams that are travelling
better. Yeah, we're travelling better at the moment. Yeah. But do you think
I'm also talking game style, and I think the game's picked up in pace this year again, and that's troubling Hawthorn big time, particularly if they're not getting anywhere near the possession or control of possession that they've had in the past. They get found out.
Do they need you back down there, Chief, again?
No, because I'm the last thing they need you.
We know that behind the scenes you take a lot of credit for setting this whole list up.
No. But you look at the number of young players that are starting to come into the Hawthorn lineup. They're aware that they need to freshen up and get new blood into that side.
So they're rebuilding?
No, they're not rebuilding. They're, what do? You revitalise as you go along. They've still got some really good core players, but they are getting towards the top end of the tree as far as age goes.
What about this as far as tonight's concerned, Duke? Sam Mitchell out.
Ooh.
Kieran Lovell in. No changes, Richmond.
Tell what it does do, Jim. It puts more pressure on Richmond than Hawthorn, I think.
You do?
Mm.
He's been their most productive midfielder by a mile.
Well, when have you got
Alistair
Hawthorn?
Clarkson's put the acid on their midfield during the week, and now their best man's out.
So you've got Hawthorn without Roughhead, Hodge, and now Mitchell. I know that they've got Rance and Cochin out themselves, which is very, very serious, and Frawley as well. I think it puts more pressure on Richmond than anyone. Well, I think you're valid in raising the disingenuous element, Chiefs. statement there. Because remember a couple of years ago, Paul Roos's first season at Melbourne, I think they won three games for the year, and there was one game he did try to tell us against Melbourne that they might have been a chance against the Hawks in that particular year, which happened to be their second of their three premierships in a row.
Consistently done that, the Chief, every time that he sat here on a Hawthorn game. Are you tipping them tonight, Chief? Do you think they're...
Oh, no. Look at him.
Rui, I have tipped them tonight.
Is that why I'm here tonight? To actually give something?
Yeah, absolutely.
Rui, that is exactly why you're here.
100%. We are dealing
with that. I don't know what you expect. I've expounded during the week what I thought their chances for the season were. I tip them every week. You don't even have to ask that question, Jig. If you did your research, you'd probably know that and you wouldn't have had to waste the airtime with the question. So I don't understand what more you want.
He's going to get the baseball bat out now, Chief.
Part of my research is finding out your tips, Chief. That's what I tend to do during the week.
Can we just explain what
this man just did to me there in the ad break? Put his hand as a fist and then wound up the finger like my 8-year-old did the other week.
That's it.
This is
sometimes
what
it's fun to be an 8-year-old. I've got something for you too, Chief.
Look at this. Look at the Chief. Rui, you're probably, especially given the time you spent in Queensland after moving as a young man, you probably looked up to the Chief, I imagine, as a young bloke watching Hawthorn in the 80s and 90s.
And then he met him.
And now you've met him and you're getting a first-hand view of just what a tool this man is.
Well, he knows. He's my favourite player. I did a project at one stage at school, wanted to change my name to Jason, at the 19 Hawthorn jersey. And then 2004, I... joined a TV show called The Gospel.
That's right.
That Jason was the host of, and all my dreams got shattered that day.
I was the normal one on that show.
Well, that's
compared to the other blokes.
We had Spider Everett and Nathan Brown, so that's a fair point. Best of a bad bunch, maybe.
Hey, Chief, I seriously want to ask you about the forward line of the Hawks. I know the midfield's had huge focus and probably so it should. It staggered us all last year that Ruffy used to spend so much time in the centre of the ground, and Jack Gunston would go up onto a wing, and yet Hawthorn would still hit the scoreboard as hard as they did with seemingly no one inside there higher than 6 foot. Has it caught up with them this year, the fact that they haven't been able to replicate that again?
For me, it's not the structure. It's the game style and the amount of possession that allows them to control the way they want to move the ball. Last year and in years gone by, there's been such an even contribution in terms of goals from Roughhead, from Gunston, from Bruce, from Rioli, from Pioplo, all the way down.
Yep.
All kicking 60, 50, 40, 30 goals. And it's given you a beautiful balance. So if one of those players is down, someone else picks up the slack. They've introduced Sicily this year, who I think's shown enough in his first few games to be considered a genuine long-term prospect as a floating forward type. Timmy O'Brien's one player we spoke about, or we will speak about it at different stages. You'll see him tonight. He can play at both ends. I think he's a potential forward prospect as well.
But it interests me, St Kilda, great example. Like, Rui's now heading up onto the wing and getting up the ground. He can do that because of Bruce and Membry and McCartan.
Yeah.
So they've still got that large marking target.
Yep.
Whereas when we've watched the Hawks for the last 18 months, they've had this beautiful marking target in Roughhead, who's just wandered up into the middle and been 15 minutes out of there.
But that's game style, Jim. Well, they haven't relied on the long kick and a contested mark.
Absolutely.
They rely on possession, controlling it, chip it around the 50 if they have to until they find that little dart pass inside and then hit one of the targets.
So what you're saying is the reason that's not working this year has got nothing to do with who's in there. It's the fact they can't control the footy centre of the ground.
Well, apart from Mitchell, who's played well in the midfield? Nobody. So half-back struggling. So they're not getting the run, the rebound, the control of ball through the middle of the ground.
And the volume into their forward 50. Yeah. Damo, you've been big on this. Down the other end of the ground, did they let Lake go a year too early?
I think they made the decision at the time, Nick, with it being the right one. But I suppose the selfish one from Alistair's point of view might have been to keep him, just knowing that he's going to do again what he'd done for 3 years anyway, and he just knew he was going to get his body right again. He's looked to try and extend the reign by getting rid of him to give it the time to other players. But I reckon right now, and he's not one to look back, and I know that, but I reckon right now, I think he'd take him back.
No.
I disagree.
I can only say no. Mm. How many times do you want me to say?
Well, expand on it, Chief. That's what I'm trying to say. Why?
Why would he want him back?
Because he's a Norm Smith medalist and star.
You reckon that would have made a difference to the way they're playing?
I think it'd assist.
No. Apart from last week where they got cut up by marks in the forward 50 against GWS, that hasn't been the problem. Contests one-on-one down there. The ball has been coming in with no pressure further afield, and teams that have played fast football, and even the Saints did it down in Tassie and nearly got hold of the Hawks. If you move the ball quick enough, you can find holes through the zone defence, and they did that. A lot of teams are doing that. They're moving the ball really, really quickly. And if there's no pressure on the ball user, gee, it's hard to stop. And doesn't matter who's down there. They're all playing the same roles, regardless. So one man can't be a superman that's all of a sudden.
So you're
stop
putting it on the midfield, Chief? Is that?
No. I'm putting it on everyone.
So in your eyes, for Hawthorn to be a contender again, because you've written them off, what do they need to do specifically? They need to change their game style.
Well, I'll tell you, this is probably the best way to sum it up. Who's had a good year for Hawthorn after 6 weeks? I can tell you, Mitchell's had a good year.
Yeah, I was going to say him. Yep.
Pioppolo.
Gibson's been okay. Poppy's been okay. Who else?
Gunston's been pretty solid.
He's been in and out.
Kicked five last week.
That's 1 week. He's been in and out.
Rioli's been pretty solid.
Maybe passable. Burgoyne, maybe passable. We're struggling, and I haven't even got to five. And there's only one that you can say has genuinely had a good season, and the others are having okay seasons. That, in a nutshell, tells you exactly what the problem is.
But isn't that also the positive, that we're only talking about five players that are having a good year, and they're 4-2? Mm. So isn't that evidence enough that they're... their best is good enough to win it?
It could be. I agree with you, if it was three or four blokes we're talking about. But when it's 10 or 12, that's when I start to worry.
Well, this is how I see it, Duke. When you get your old tired line on the veld, they're clinging on. They're looking at the pride of lionesses. They're looking around wondering, have I got to go back there again? And then suddenly a fresh one wanders in at his prime, in his peak, with the mane fluffed out, and then none of the old battle scars on
him. With you.
And the old bloke still thinks he's got to fire some shots across the young bloke's bow. Rui's wandered in here. Suddenly he's a cantankerous chief.
He is.
Not happy.
And I think Rui's just set the place alight from what I would...
I would have no doubt about that.
Not cantankerous with Rui. It's more the pipe cleaner and the little whim of a fellow next to me that just make no sense.
And that's Casey Jim on the at Triple M Footy handle. Chief, we love the honesty on Fox Footy, but what about offering something to the people made you are what you are today? The pack.
The pack.
No, that's Casey.
Well,
a key member of the pack.
Explained everything that I've said all week, and you blokes want more.
And it's a truculent Chief we find. Of course, Nick Revolt's wandered in, and he's going to be with us for the night, a breath of fresh air, and... the Chief's just decided to, I want to bring ship off forward.
He has. He's demanded it. He said, I need more airtime while I'm going as well as I am. You might as well get more of me, Chief.
It's not an extended one tonight, but I am in the mood, Jim.
You would appear to be.
So let's go, Flop.
Ship the hell off.
Ship off.
Ship off.
Ship off.
Find a little boat and ship the hell off.
I can say this, that the world of tennis has dominated my thoughts this week.
What is happening?
But it's not just one man, and there's two men that need to be discussed here. Of course, we know about Bernie Tomic. And he was playing in Madrid, and it was a round one match against Fognini. Got the match point down, and he just decided to grip the racket by the wrong end. Couldn't care less.
What's that about?
Well, it's not a great endorsement for a young man that's trying to break into the top 10 in the world. Mm. It's got absolute icons of the game starting to ask questions. Novak Djokovic has been one of those, saying, I'm not quite sure he's disciplined enough or is committed enough. And when he was questioned about it, he was pretty cool and calm and collected. And he said, well, don't really care about match point. Would you care if you were 23 and worth over 10 mil? Not sure those around him are advising him as well as they possibly could.
No,
because
I'm
that's
not
probably
either.
Not the response you're looking for.
No.
At the same time, at the Istanbul Open in Turkey, Grigor Dimitrov was playing a guy by the name of Diego Schwartzman, who's a young Argentinian, has never won a title before. They're playing the final. Dimitrov wins the first set, loses the second set. He's then down 5-love in the third set. Mm. And in the third set, he's already broken two rackets. He broke one early, just smashed it into the ground. Broke a second one mid-set, smashed it into the ground. And at 5-love down, he walks up and right in front of the chair umpire, smashes the third racket to bits, turns around, shakes the chair umpire's hand, and then calls the opponent over and said, I'm done. That'll do.
No.
This is a young man who's in line to win his first title, never got to match point, never got the satisfaction of finishing it the way you would normally finish a tennis match. He's just ripped him of it. Absolutely disgraceful. Apologise to him later on, but not worth a pinch of you-know-what. So I think on behalf of the tennis world and all those people that didn't like what they saw, I think Grigor and Bernie can both ship off.
Ship right off.
At the moment.
Oh, I agree.
And then something that... really, I took to heart, and this is probably one that requires a little bit of discussion. I just want to play you something, Jim, first and foremost.
Yes, please. Where's
the Chief?
What is he doing?
Who knows with Chief? I think he's been dropped.
I think he needs a week off. His performance has been poor, Bristol. His attitude's been so poor. And I think he's just had a week off, and we'll reassess whether he comes back.
I think everyone, every now and then, Brian, needs a little week in the twos just to realign themselves.
Being dropped. What planet are you blokes on? Seriously. All right. Now, it's become, and I spent a lot of time reading about this because I found it very, very interesting. Mm. Oxford University have done a study on the four tiers of friendship. Your first tier of friendship really only includes three or four people. These are your lifelong best mates. The second tier is around about seven people on that. The third tier, just 20 friends.
Yep.
So you've gone from great friends to good friends to just friends.
Acquaintances.
And then the fourth tier is about 100 acquaintances.
Okay.
Now, the bottom line is that everyone here in the Triple M box has failed to make the cut in all four tiers of my friendship. So to Duke, to Jim, to Walker, to Chew Man, to who else? Spud works here, to Snorkel, to the producer, to everybody, you can all ship off. Because you're basically shitting. So, away you go.
The whole network.
Hey, Duke, never have I known a man who more needs to study friendship than the Chief. You should go and do a 10-year course on it at Oxford, Chief.
You only need a few, Jim. That's all you need, my friend.
I don't think he's got a second tier. I'm not even sure he's got a first tier, actually.
I want to know who's in that first tier.
Would there be four people that would be lifelong mates of the Chief? I doubt it.
It's a good insight for a first gamer sitting here.
It is.
Part of the Triple M family.
How are you finding it?
Yeah, no, it's very warm.
Don't trust these blokes.
Yeah, that's
right. Not going to get you anywhere.
What, Rui,
stay true to yourself.
I know as a leader of your club, you'll be an assessor and probably, because you've been there for a long time as the captain, getting towards being an expert in body language. How would you see the Chief's body language just over the first 35, 40 minutes?
I'd say combative. He's ready to go.
He's particularly happy with himself, though, too, Rui, tonight. Because I reckon you probably get a smirk, you know.
No, no, no.
Sometimes that can be wind.
That's it.
But tonight, every now and then, just caught him just admiring his own work.
It can be difficult at times because I tend to work on a more intellectual level. And sometimes that tends to go a little above you guys. But when you can all get on the same wavelength, it actually makes for better conversation.
Now, Purple, I know. Did you hear we all got shipped off just then? Or
I heard the telling of it, Jim. I was listening to what Peggy O'Neill said at the President's dinner over there. But, I copped a little drive-by too.
Well, no, we all copped it.
We all did.
Yeah, we all copped it. Well, only because we quite rightly pointed out the Chief needed to be rested for a week because he was underwhelming. And now he's shipped us all off.
And I'm with you. I think Rui has seriously inspired the Chief tonight.
Yeah,
the all-time great Nick Riewoldt.
You are different, Chief. There's no doubt.
I won't say
you're intimidated because you don't get intimidated by anyone, but you are different.
You've brought it. A different game.
You are different,
Chief, haven't you?
I'm intimidated.
Well, you're a little bit, I reckon.
I love this man. Why would I be intimidated by him?
But I just think you are. He's fresher and newer and better.
No, he's just a decent bloke, Jim.
He is. He engages
unlike
with
the
people.
Rest of
That's
you.
It. He expands on his thoughts.
That's it. Now, Peggy, what are we doing there? Are we going to play them now? We don't want to wait and come later. All right, what have you heard, Nana?
Jim, she's spoken only moments ago, and she spoke very, very well, as you're about to hear. She has a good crack at the media and says that the club, as according to its own best endeavours, will stay as strong as it possibly can.
This week, there's been much written and spoken about the club's football performance. We aren't playing well, and when that happens, pressure always comes, especially when you're a big, traditional club, and especially when expectations are high. All of us are extremely disappointed with what's been delivered on field so far this season, and we completely understand the frustration of our fans and supporters. The Richmond faithful have been patient and are the most loyal of fans. They're at the center of all that we do. So what now? With all this scrutiny, do we make reactionary decisions? Do we give the media the head on the plate they all seem so eager for? And the answer to that is no. We'll withstand the pressure and make any decisions in the cool light of day. It was interesting to read the opinion piece in Today's Age by business leader Harold Mitchell. He wrote, "Almost everyone loses their bearings under intense pressure and public scrutiny." He then went on to say, "You need to remain calm in the middle of the storm." He wasn't, but he could have been writing about football. As I said in this room a couple of weeks ago, there's no one reason when we are successful, and there's no single reason when we come up short. Looking for a scapegoat is the easiest of sport, and it is not us. We will ask ourselves and each other hard questions to try to turn our season around. but and make no.
And that's Peggy O'Neill, Jim. She went on to just expand on the club's pursuit of the women's licence and a few other matters too. But, yeah, pretty defiant. And, look, it's good to hear her speak that way because we don't hear a lot from her. And she didn't. She chose not to put herself out there when Dan Richardson did and Brendan Gale did the other day. And a couple of players were scattered around the media ranks as well. But, yeah, it's defiant. And, look, a lot will spin off what happens, I reckon, by 10:30 tonight. If they get a good result tonight, those words stack up really well. If they had a bad result tonight, I think they're back to the drawing board.
Is it defiant, though, or is that just simply, you know, stating it absolutely as it is, that you're not going to panic regardless of what's happening and, you know, you stay calm and make qualified decisions? Really, that's what I read into that, which is exactly what you want your board and your chairman to do.
Well, it's sending the defiant message that there's, and this is her words, no scapegoat, no head on the platter. We're going to withstand the pressure. Yeah. Whether they do or not, it's another matter, Jim, but that's what she's saying.
But that's the discussion we had before, Warrior, where I said it appears that the media is looking for a scapegoat and they've been naming everybody bar Damien Hardwick, effectively, because he's just been recontracted. So I think she's just making the point that you can keep naming people within the organisation, but I would take great heart out of the fact that she's backed them all up.
Yeah, and if you're a member of and a fan of the Tigers, you'd like hearing that on the way to the footy. Hey, the game's just finished here between Victoria and WA. Vic Metro,
a nail-biter, Jim.
It was. These are the girls. We're not sure the age group is the only thing. The
looks about under 16, I reckon, Jim, about at a guess. Yep. It's been extraordinary watching this tonight. Some of the quality on display.
Give us the score, please.
14-11-95. Vic Metro over Western Australia didn't register a score, Chief.
Did not score.
We've been admiring how good are some of the players out there.
It bodes well for the women's league that's going to come in, because the standard out here is, seriously, it's been really impressive. Some great individual efforts, and Vic Metro played a good brand of footy.
That's as good or better as some local boys' games that I've seen played.
And the passion, too, for what they're doing is clear to see. Speaking of things that are brilliant, earlier this week, a tragedy struck the very close-knit community of Mildura, northwest Victoria, of course. 31-year-old Karen Balage was killed in her home as a result of domestic violence. And the amazing part about this was Karen was herself a local campaigner for the White Ribbon Foundation. She played an integral role in getting Mildura Rural City Council White Ribbon accreditation. And in honour of her tireless efforts to raise awareness in that community and around Victoria to take a stand against domestic violence, White Armbands for Karen is asking any sporting code to don a white armband or wear a white ribbon to pay tribute to a person lost so young and senselessly. Karen's friend Rachel Bailey, who began the initiative with the support of Karen's family, has created a Facebook event, White Armbands for Karen, and is asking everyone participating in this to post pictures of their sporting games and events. Post them on social media with the hashtag StandWithKaren. That's hashtag StandWithKaren. So what we're basically saying is, no matter where you're playing around Victoria or, for that matter, Australia, white armband or white ribbon, and then social media, StandWithKaren after the hashtag over the course of this weekend. I say all of this because Benny McGlynn Duke, who's an old Mildura boy, I think Dareton up there, will be wearing a white armband in the Swans game against Essendon on Sunday. Hamish Hartlett is doing the same for Port's game against Brisbane, and that is absolutely brilliant. This is a beautiful young lady. I know a bit about her through a friend of mine who's related, who was just taken from us in the most senseless and horrendous way.
Yeah, well said, Jim, and it resonates with a lot of people that I know. It's something us at Triple M Footy are right behind the White Ribbon Foundation, and I'm just writing a note down. And the junior footy teams, we're both involved. Yep, we will make sure that they wear the white armbands on Sunday when they play. It's a horrific story, a senseless death, as you said, and make sure you get behind that cause.
That's it. And once you've done it, get the photos, social media, hashtag StandWithKaren, well done to Rachel and everyone involved in that. All right, lots of footy to discuss with you, Purple. But before we do, we don't get access to Nick Riewoldt often enough. And it's great to have you with us, Rui, all afternoon and evening. Tell us about your own future. A bit of speculation in the paper that you may have even re-signed or be about to re-sign. I know, Damo, you've got a line of questioning on that, but where's it all at?
Well, my management and the club have had some very preliminary discussions, but what I can say is that I'm really excited about the club's future and I'm really keen to play on. So my body's feeling great. A few years ago, I thought I was in a fair bit of trouble, was draining the knee every week, and we're at round 7 this year and I haven't had to do that. So lost a bit of weight, which I think might have helped that situation. And basically just loving the direction of the club, feel invigorated by the young players that are playing so well. And I'm really keen to go on again next year.
And your coach, Alan Richardson, today endorsed those views of yourself there, Nick. He does want you definitely to go into a 17th season.
He certainly wanted to make sure he played a bit of footy, and is he still loving it? You know, there's a lot of boxes that he's already ticked, and I think that it's probably reasonably close that he'll make the ultimate call, and we, you know, we would like him to continue to play.
Do you ponder beyond 2017 now that you've got 2017 in your thoughts?
Not at this stage. I'm really excited about what looks like unfolding in the next few years for the club, getting back to Moorabbin and potentially pushing further up the ladder. So there are some carrots there, I suppose, to want to try to do the right thing as far as my preparation goes and ensures I have a bit more longevity in the game. But once you get over 30, Damo, the club tend to not look too far into the future, and I don't think you can afford to do it either, apart from having an eye on your body and making sure you're doing everything right along the way. And most importantly, I'm loving footy still. I love training. I love getting up in the morning and going to work and working hard with the boys and playing on the weekend, which is what it's all about.
Rui, what about the captaincy? You just spoke then about how meticulous you need to be with your preparation, and as you get towards the absolute twilight of your career, sometimes it can be all about looking after yourself to make sure you can get that every last drop out of yourself. Is there a time where you think it's right to hand the captaincy over and sort of pass the baton to the next person?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're getting really close to that point. And I've said the same thing for the last three or four seasons, that whatever's in the best interest of the football club, if that's someone else growing in the role or if it's me staying in the role and assisting someone, whatever that might be, whatever the scenario, I'm happy to accommodate that.
Jack Stephen most likely, do you think?
Oh, look, he's certainly, I would say, our most influential player. The way he plays, the way he trains, he's our best trainer and clearly our best player now. So he's a quiet guy, so he's got some work to do. He's come into the leadership group this year, and he's really working hard to improve his leadership skills. It doesn't really come that naturally to him, but the growth that he's made in such a small amount of time, 6 weeks, has been really, really great. So he's one guy that could do it.
Hey, well done, Rui. It's a great thing that you decided to play on for another year, and your form's fantastic. And let's hope that continues and you play on for another year beyond. You had a concussion a week or so ago. Was there any thought about your history on that front at all?
Definitely some concern and some thought about my history. The one I had last year was a really bad one. And I think the visual of being out before you hit the ground and spending 6 minutes on the ground and not waking up till you get off, that's tough, especially for your family to watch. And once we met with the specialist, we met with Paul McCreary, the preeminent man in, I guess, the Southern Hemisphere as far as concussion goes, and he really reassured me that I was at no greater risk as a result of that hit to sustaining more concussions in the future. Then that really reassured me. And the club doctors at the football club, Ian Stone, has been there for my entire career. He's a good friend of mine. He would never put me in a situation, nor would Tim Barber, where I was at risk of damaging my future. I'm a father now. Yep. I wouldn't do anything silly. So once all the advice was really positive, I felt comfortable about playing.
What's the running total over the journey now? How many concussions?
Oh, I think there's different severity as well within that spectrum. So actually being knocked out, it would only be a couple. But concussions, it would probably close to a handful. But again, there's different severity within that. And particularly now, the way the doctors approach it, the one against Collingwood a few weeks ago was on the very, very minor end of the scale. But such is the care and concern that the AFL and the doctors have for their players that they're always going to err on the side of caution.
Rui, tell me about this new role and maybe that helping you a bit with the longevity. We saw Matty Richardson out here handing the cup out a minute ago. The back end of his career, he went up to the wing and was very open in saying that it actually got him another year because there wasn't quite the bash and crash that he used to experience as the deep forward. Is there anything in that?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. I think physically getting up the ground and playing that different role, it's definitely not as taxing on the body being involved in the crash and bash and the contest, as you mentioned, inside 50. But mentally as well, being able to play a different role, learn a new role, spend time with the midfield coach and the midfield players, and really challenging yourself to become a great player in something, an area that's foreign to you on the ground, has been really refreshing as well.
And Nick, you've trailblazed the practice of getting out of Australia and over to America, obviously for wife reasons as much as anything to begin with. But it's worked for you really well, hasn't it? You've done it for at least, I think, 3 or 4 years. Alex Rance tried it. It wasn't as well received by his teammates and coaches as you. But will you do that again this year?
No, probably not. No, last year was a special circumstance, given the year that I had personally with my family situation, yep. And Maddie. So the club were really accommodating there and allowing me to do that. And as you said, it was a wife decision as much as anything. So the boss made sure I pushed pretty hard to get some time off and spend it away. And it was great. I know there were quite a few players, Ramsey included, barracking for me to have a good start to the season. So it justified for all the 30-year-olds. Hodgie actually sent me a text message saying, mate, can you make sure you're in good form early because I want to try it next year. So I've had plenty of support out there from the 30-plus guys, and it seems to have worked for me. You know, it's an incredibly long pre-season, AFL pre-season, and if you're trusted enough to do the work, then I think it might start to become in vogue a little bit more.
Saw something of interest on the weekend, last weekend, Chief and Rui and Damo. And the way we roll you on Triple M, Rui, you tend to just bring something to the table if it involves one of our own, much like you would do at St Kilda. So last Sunday, I pull into the car park down at the Glen Iris Gladiators for the under-9 game, and I'm there about 15 minutes early on sort of my own business. In rolls a car at high speed, and the doors open, and out pops our man here, James Brayshaw. I get to meet the beautiful Joni. Yeah, Jim's mum who's in town. Joni. So that was a great pleasure. And then I'm waiting
still dirty
for,
and not getting picked up at the airport, Joni.
I did bring that up with Joni, and she thought was it was highly disrespectful of her young son not to do that. And then out rolls young George Brayshaw. Say hello to George. And then young Freddie, who plays in the under-9s with my boy,
come
Will.
Frederick.
Freddie gets out. He's got a fair bit of swagger, Freddie Brayshaw. Can I say, for a start, he's dominating the under-9s, playing forward. He's tough. He takes marks. He kicks goals. So
takes after his old.
We're
man.
Really questioning whether or not he actually has the DNA of Jim running.
He's got the strut. I've seen the strut.
Yeah, he's got plenty of strut. Out of the car pops Freddie Brayshaw, and Rui. He has got himself dressed. He's got himself sorted, and he has a top knot.
Oh no!
He has put his top knot in, Chief. The only under-9 I've ever seen to wear a top knot. So
Jim,
is that bad parenting? Is that something that Jim needs?
Well, we spoke about Bernie Tomich earlier.
It's in a.
Yeah. It's got to be a parenting issue.
Oh. Did I not acknowledge to you, Duke, in the car park that it was a disgrace, and that his mother has far too much say in his appearance, and I'm not a fan of it at all. Duke, let me just say this:
we know where the swagger comes from, young Freddie, and it's not Sarah.
Let me just say this, Duke. I had to talk him back to the man bun. He was going a John McEnroe style headband. That's what he had on. I said, no son of mine wears a headband playing footy. So I said, get that thing off.
Jimmy's 9.
So then he's gone with the bun.
He's pulled the man bun out. Chief, what would you advise in that situation?
It's incredibly disappointing, but to be brutally honest, Duke, I'm not surprised.
All I'll say is this. He's had the trim this week, Chief. So he would present himself in a lot better fashion.
How'd that go at school? Private school boy?
Oh, I know. Well, what he's normally got is a bit like the Nat Fife. He's just got hair everywhere. Because he can't see if he doesn't take it. So anyway, it's fixed now. He's been to the
He's a ripping young Freddie.
I agree, Duke. It's disgraceful of his mother to present him like that. And she's got a lot to answer for.
If you had have told me earlier, Duke, I would have put him in ship off. I would have no qualms about shipping off a 9-year-old.
You can't ship off young Freddie.
Freddie, you're on notice, my friend.
I've got a great respect for young Freddie. It's dad that I'm a bit of, that was where I was aiming.
And he did get his calf kicked halfway through the game and spent far too long on the deck for my liking as well, Jim.
I did notice
and he did cop a clip from his old man afterwards.
He copped a nasty one in the shin, Jim.
And stayed far too long on the ground.
And when you did ship off in the last score, he bobbed up and kicked a couple of late
ones. I had to go and take the other one. That's one thing we do need to discuss with our junior footy club. When you got two at a different age, just stagger the game so that you can actually get one to the other one.
So you think the Yarra League should revolve around your schedule, Jim?
That's exactly what I think, Jim. That's not helping any of us at all. Going to Clifton Hill, I didn't even know where that was. I tell you, it was at Clifton Hill as I'm standing there just waiting for our game. A big Savoy rocker.
Really?
Just wandered by. Just randomly just wandered by Big Sav. I thought, geez, that's unbelievable. Don't even know if he had anyone playing in the game or not. Just came cruising by. Hey, Ed, off the long run, I need to talk to you about this. Hot breakfast today, and he's been in the crosshairs a bit with this whole Academy Sydney thing.
Yeah, and he was fairly animated about it, Jim. And I know it's something that you're very passionate about as well. And I think sometimes with Ed, because he is out there on almost every topic, and that's what you do when you do breakfast radio, and the way that Ed rolls, he tends to wade in, and sometimes that can get misconstrued for not understanding the point. For whatever reason, the powers that be in Sydney, and that's Tony Shepherd, who's the president of GWS, and Andrew Pridham from Sydney, had got audio sent to them that they thought that he had accused them of being salary cap cheats, which hadn't happened and wasn't the case. And in fact, what we were talking about on our show, the Hot Breakfast, was the Parramatta Eels, who have been found guilty in recent days of salary cap cheating. So it was pretty fired up, and we haven't got the 18 minutes to perhaps play the full amount, but maybe we've got a little taste of what happened this morning on Triple M.
Tony Shepherd, who's the president of GWS, he was going nuts because he accused us or accused me of saying that they'd cheated the salary cap. They sent me the grab. It was the day before when we were speaking to Mark Geyer about the Eels.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Eels with Mark Geyer. I mean, how paranoid are these people getting up there?
Yeah, so there was a fair bit more demo if you were in the car this morning and listening to it. And it got a bit personal. So, you know what? Intellectual pygmy, I think, was the term used to describe Ed from Andrew Pridham. And there's been a bit going back and forth.
Which he retracted, Das, obviously, and had to, given that he based that intellectual pygmy assessment of Triple M footy. He didn't mention Ed specifically, but did use that same terminology about Triple M footy. He had to retract it. It was a conversation, as you said, that was not about the topic that he thought it was.
Which he's since done and apologised to Andrew Pridham and move on.
Yep. And he is the face of it, Edit, whether he likes it or not. And he's right. He is one of the few people who does speak publicly, goes on record with certain topics. And, yeah, clearly the Australian newspaper made him the focus of this issue during the week.
Jim, I know you're very passionate about fairness in terms of what the academy selections mean. But you're one of a handful of people prepared to go on the record. People would be staggered listening in their car to Triple M Footy. How frightened people are with opinions in AFL football to voice their opinions clearly. For why? For feeling
know,
of some sort of
retribution
from headquarters?
That's why it does.
Look, I suspect that might be it. I don't know. You'd have to ask them. But, you know, I am of the opinion, Duke, that once you take the position as the chairman of a footy club, it's incumbent on you to have a strong opinion on all of these things because you're representing your club and you're one of the 18 clubs in the comp. The only thing I'll say, and I have absolutely nothing against Tony Shepherd. I think he's a very good man. I have nothing against Andrew Pridham. I think he's a very good man. The only thing I'll say about this is there is a reason, Duke, why these two gentlemen are so ferociously vocal about this. And that is because these academies are liquid gold.
Mm.
And if I had liquid gold as something that North Melbourne had and no one else had, I'd be ferociously vocal about it as well. Because once it's gone, they're never getting it back, and they know how valuable this is.
Yeah.
The one thing, you know, we can all have money, you know, Rui's club and your, the Western Bulldogs and North, and then you go up to Hawthorn, and they're all different levels of size of clubs. The one thing more than anything else you would love to have is access to talent that other people can't get. Because that's we're all not-for-profit businesses.
No, it solves all your problems, doesn't it?
Yeah. All you're doing is putting a footy team on the field. That's the only reason you exist. So the one thing we all would crave is talent. Isaac Heaney, Callum Mills, this sort of talent that other clubs can't get their hands on. So that is why these two gentlemen, who are very smart, are being as vocal as they are about it, because they know that this is golden. This is a golden trail.
Rui, you're trying to rebuild your club and get talent and doing it really methodically and with good list management. Are you frustrated by how hard it's going to be, given the talent that goes up to the clubs in GWS and Gold Coast?
Well, we've gone through it in an already compromised environment with trying to have a rebuild while two expansion teams were coming on has been difficult, and that's why St Kilda was so strategic and made very difficult decisions to get higher picks and get back into the first round of the draft. So I think the clubs need to adjust to what is an unprecedented landscape in the AFL. But look, the AFL have obviously needed GWS and the Gold Coast to perform really strongly from the get-go, and that's why they were inundated with so many early picks. And now we're starting to see what that looks like when it clicks, when it works. And I think everyone's a little bit frightened by it.
So today, Duke, we spoke about it on the rush hour, and all I said to Bill is, I was part of the group that signed off on the concessions to start these two clubs. Were they a bit excessive? Maybe, but I think that's better than them coming in underwhelming and getting poleaxed every week. So, yeah, that might be the case. The 17-year-olds, I think, is probably, if you put the lasso of truth around the AFL, they'd probably say that's where they got it wrong, because they thought they'd on-trade them, and they didn't. They smartly hung on to them, both the new franchises, and that The 17-year-olds didn't even get to the draft. They just went straight to those two clubs. And so that might have made it an excessive thing. But look, you know what? We all signed off on that, so let's just forget about that and move on, because that's a lot, enabled these two clubs to have really strong lists. And
but
play
what about
well now,
though?
But now what I'm saying is we're through that. We're out the other side. As Rui said, clubs have missed out on draft picks they probably should have got. But you know what? That's part of the bigger picture. But now we're through the other side. All I'm saying is same amount of money to everyone to pay their players, same access to the talent, and let's go. 18 clubs all having an equal go at it.
But Jim, why are we only having this discussion about GWS? As Rui just said, it's Gold Coast as well.
Oh,
no,
absolutely.
No one cares about Gold Coast because they're not going anywhere.
You're probably right, Chief, so it gets slanted GWS's way, and that might be unfair. But I think if you asked Ed, he'd say, look, I'm worried about the whole four academies, the whole four clubs that are accessing talent that we can't get our hands on.
The difficulty is we've got teams that, and we're talking about the expansion clubs here, that don't have a rich history of tradition and successful times and tough times to build upon, to have that core membership support that comes through. So they're basically blank canvas jobs, which makes it a very different beast, I think, to all the other clubs.
Okay,
so I understand what you're saying, but to make this competition work, they need to be successful.
Yeah.
But now we're saying, oh, we think you might be too successful, so let's just pull back on you. And it's a very subjective thing. They haven't won anything yet.
No, they haven't. But all I'd say to that is, if you ask a lifetime supporter and member of Rui's club, they've been in the comp 120 years, won one flag.
Yep.
So they'll say, well, hang on, why are we concerned about them? You know, we've been here forever. We don't get any of this help. We just box on like everyone else.
No, but they played a couple of grand finals within the last decade, haven't they? This mob hasn't won anything. Has not won anything.
And no one would begrudge them, Chiefs, if it's an equal and fair footing. Mm. And if you think that they've cooked it too far, then just bring it back. And I think that's the discussion, to think, you know what, the Riverina area, is that genuine academy growth, plucking kids that would play rugby league? Maybe there's a part of that that isn't. And maybe that needs to be looked at. Likewise with the goal. If you've overcooked it, Chief, we're just saying bring it back into line. I think find the fair point, and maybe that's just been missed.
Yeah, we're very quick to say we've overcooked it, though. Right. For a team that hasn't won a final, hasn't played a final.
And Kane Lambert, best on ground the opening round against Carlton. He's also going to miss because he got a bit of a glancing blow that Kane, welcome for a start.
Thanks very
Tell
much
Tell us exactly what happened, please.
Yeah, unfortunately, last weekend I ended up with a cracked rib and a punctured lung.
So tell me, because for people who are listening driving in their car, that's the sort of stuff that happens in a car accident. When it happened, what were you thinking the moment it happened?
When it happened, I was sort of spewing because it was only the first 30 seconds, and I thought, you know, I'm going to have to play through a bit of a knock to my back. Yep. And probably wasn't until about 8 or 10 minutes in that I realised I was real short of breath. And, once I wanted to take in more air, I couldn't take it in. So I come to the bench, obviously made the doctor aware that I thought I was winded. So I had some time to settle down, and when I went back on the ground, I just couldn't change speed or call for the ball and take the air in. So
the crack in your rib didn't provide you with pain that was sort of worse than just the not having any air?
I suppose, yeah, it was painful, but every knock in the game is pretty painful, and it takes some time to actually realise how much it is hurting you. But with the adrenaline running and that sort of thing, you just sort of try to forget about it.
So what happened, mate? Did they take you off to the hospital straight away? Explain to the people out there, what was the process?
Yeah, so about quarter time, I went down to the rooms, and the doc assessed me and said, there's a good chance you may have a punctured lung just because I couldn't get my breath back. And they called the ambulance, and, I sort of felt okay just sitting around. I was okay, but he sort of explained to me what could happen and, whether the lung would collapse and I could sort of deteriorate pretty quickly. So once he said that, it was a little bit concerning, and heading off to the hospital, and they did their tests and kept an eye on me and looked after me really well, and I was fortunate enough to go home.
So the crack in the bone was what went through your lung, or was it what happened there?
Yeah, so in effect, if you imagine a sort of a green stick, when it breaks, the inside of it breaks, and that's what cuts the lung. And then I'm not sure the too much technical terms, but I think an air socket gets created between your lung and your chest cavity, which can get larger, and in effect you have to get a needle and a bit of a tube to release that air, which I was fortunate enough not to have.
That sounds like a whole heap of fun, Chief, does it? I love sitting there and Rui out here who just turn up and play, and as you said, Jim, push on. Most people, that's sort of 6 or 8 weeks off work. Kane's sitting here with a big smile on his face. You go back to round one, you play an unbelievable game. The key moments, you stand up and win, and you think Tigers are off to a really strong start to the year. From your point of view, where has it gone wrong? Why are you in the position where you haven't won a game since?
Yeah, it is quite to put a finger on it, but I just think we're not executing the basic skills of the game. We're missing easy handballs, missing easy kicks, and referring pressure, in effect, turns into an easy turnover, and we're getting scored against pretty heavily.
Kane, how do the players handle it when the Tigers are the story that the media want to talk about? They're starting to name staff members. They're starting to come up with all sorts of reasons why who's not doing their job and who shouldn't be there. How do the players actually handle that when the outside world is almost attacking the club?
Yeah, it is a big thing in footy, that external noise. But, between our four walls, we're confident, with what we're doing and our messaging. So we just want to stay positive with each other and, forget about what's happening outside the club and, stay strong and stay confident.
Without delving into the confidentialities of a week in the life of a footy club, have you done stuff together as players this week outside the coaching structures?
Not particularly anything different than what we usually would. It's been a pretty normal week. Meetings and everything's been pretty similar.
And Delidio coming back last week, obviously it's a shortish turnaround for a guy who missed a lot of footy anyway. Is he right to go tonight?
He is, Lids. He's a quality player and, he looks after himself extremely well and extremely professional. So, I've got complete confidence Lids will come out and play a great game tonight.
We're speaking with Kane Lambert from the Richmond Football Club. Kane, there's talk of a tinkering of the game plan. That can't be easy just to flick a switch and do something different from one week to the next.
I don't think too many things will change. Obviously, this week I've been out of a few meetings with the injury and I've missed a few different things. But, from the feedback I've heard, I don't think a lot's going to change. And, purely it's about our execution. Obviously, week to week, little things change on opposition and the way you want to do things. But I don't think there's going to be too many drastic changes.
And if players are looking for confidence, well, you get it when you come up against Hawthorn because you guys have a great record against the Hawks.
Yeah, we do seem to have a great record against the Hawks. But obviously, they're a quality outfit. We got to be on our absolute best against them.
You need your leaders to stand up when you're under pressure and under fire. And obviously, Koch and Rance out of your side tonight, too. Of the real preeminent leaders at the club. So who stands up tonight, do you think, for the footy club?
Obviously, Grigger last week had a fantastic game. I think Lids will stand up as well. Chabby going back. But also, our sort of younger players need to stand up too. We can't put the load on those experienced boys. We need to share the load.
Big Ivan omitted this week. I didn't see a huge amount of the game last week, but did he come back too early or is he just out of touch a bit at the moment?
It's an interesting one, Ivan. He's one of probably the perfect teammate. He'll do anything for you. Whether or not he come back too early, I'm not too sure. But I'm sure he'll play good footy in VFL tomorrow, and we'll see him up here soon.
Well, Kane, we really appreciate you coming up, mate. Good luck tonight. So, do you go back onto the breathalyzer, or what? Are you passed all of that? You just got to sit and let your body heal itself.
I don't have to carry an oxygen tank, which is good. But just let it heal, take its time, and hopefully I'll be out there pretty soon.
So, what is pretty soon?
Really, we're not too sure. It just depends how it feels. Could be next week, could be 4 weeks. We're just taking it day by day at the moment.
Okay, and are you worried? I guess you are, and the staff will be that the fitness will come away during that time, or will you be able to ultra G it, or how will you be able to keep your aerobic levels up?
I don't think it's the aerobic that we're too worried about. So I was running on Thursday at a pretty good level, so my breathing's fine. It's just purely the rib and when I can take contact. So we have fantastic medical staff. They'll look after me, and I'll be in good condition when I come back.
Beauty, mate. Well, thanks very much for coming up. We appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Kane Lambert, staggering juke.
Yep.
For anyone who hasn't played, and you blokes have, this brutal game, to have that sort of damage inflicted on you in what looked like a pretty innocent sort of collision is just extraordinary.
And I reckon as soon as you stop, you then can't imagine how you possibly put yourself through that. I mean, Luke Hodge last week tore his meniscus in the first 2 minutes, didn't tell anyone, played out the rest of the game. He broke his arm at the start of the year and barely even sort of flinched and played out the rest of the game as well. So they're as hard as you would possibly imagine, Damo, the modern player.
Trent Cotchin, the first quarter of the game last week, they lost to Port Adelaide, broke his cheekbone or fractured his cheekbone and didn't tell the club until long after the game had finished.
Anyone who questions the courage it takes to play our game the way it is at the moment has got no understanding of what it's all about, Jim.
And what I found interesting, Rui, talking to Tom McDonald from the Melbourne Footy Club, is his brother Oscar and he haven't played enough together, but they've played a bit of senior footy. He said, I think it was round one when Oscar McDonald got injured. He said, it's the only time when someone gets injured that you actually look back and have a second look at him. He said, most of the time someone's injured, you just got to keep focusing on what you're doing, and he gets carted off and someone else comes on and you just move on, and it really is as cold and brutal as that. But he said, when it's your brother, he said, two or three times I just kept wheeling my head around to see if he was okay. I mean, that's staggering too, that you've just got to keep pushing forward.
They're just a byproduct of footy, unfortunately. They're the worst part about footy is injuries and getting injured yourself and seeing your teammates get injured. But it's a pretty combative game out there, and it's just a part of it. You go out and a lot of the time you expect to get hurt.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Triple M rocks football.